Hello, and welcome to the analyst call. My name is Tom, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. This can be done by pressing star one to register your question at any time. If at any point you require assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to your host, Felipe de Rovira, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Okay, good morning to all of you. Well, as we've published this week, I'm now available for your question because I guess you had time to analyze what you wanted to analyze. So please proceed.
Thank you. So just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your keypads now. We currently have four questions in the queue, the first of which comes from the line of Dominic O'Brien from Exane. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. Can I just start with one on R&D? Could you give us the capitalization rate for Opel in 2018 and the second half of 2018? Because I think when I back it out for your numbers, I'm getting a capitalization rate of close to 60% for Opel in the second half of the year and around 40% for the full year. So I just wanted to make sure I was doing that correctly. And then just another one on R&D. Am I right in saying that the depreciation for Opel was 90 million? I think I'm getting that from your annual report. And is this just depreciation, or does this include amortization as well? Was there any amortization of the R&D, or was the P&L R&D just the expensed amount less the capitalized amount? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Dominic, for your question. On OV, the capitalization rate of the year was 35%. Frankly, I do not have in my mind the split between H1 and H2, because the capitalization rule depend on the moment that we capitalize between two gates. One gate at the beginning of the project and one gate closer to the end. So this rule is the same for PCD and OV, and we've been constantly applying that in PCD for years and years. So it gives us 35%, and there is not a lot of sense about H1 or H2, because it's not a question of policy, it's a question of activity in the projects. Just as a reminder, in PCD, the rate was 47%, and it was absolutely stable between 17 and 18. You also mentioned, you also asked for amortization. If I remember well, we had only 10% capitalization rate in 17, with a very low amount, so the amortization in 18 were not significant.
Okay, thank you. And then can I just quickly follow up on the R&D side of things? Is Opel still expected to get to PCD levels of R&D capitalization at some point in the future? And can you give us any guide on where that will be in 2019?
Well, on the midterm vision, there is no reason that the application of the same rules should give a different result between OV and PCD. After that, it's a question of activity in the projects. So it will increase progressively to something similar to PCD.
Right, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Gaetan Toulemont from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, you're now unmuted.
Good morning, and thank you for hosting that call. I have two questions on the same subject, which is China. If I do the math correctly, which I don't know if I'm doing it properly, is that the losses in the second half have been pretty significant for both subsidies, DPCA and CAPSA, and end up with approximately 150 million, 160 million, the clean losses. And the question is that what measures can you take to not to multiply that loss by two in 2019? That's my first question. The second question, I'm a little bit lost when I look at the balance sheet of DPCA. It looks like that the cash burn has been pretty significant because you move from a net cash of 1.2 billion into a net loss, or net debt, sorry. So I get up to approximately 1.5 billion cash consumption in last year. So can you clarify a little bit those two points? That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Gaëtan, for these two questions. On the DPC side, which is what is clear is we had a cash burn that was significant, as you mentioned, that was mainly due to the working capital effect, because you remember that in China, the payment terms to supplier is extremely long. We are talking about 100. It depends between 120 and 180 days, and given the drop in production, we had a very strong effect. So that's so the key thing, as we were mentioning, is to stabilize volumes in order to avoid to repeat that effect. Because if you remove that one-shot effect on the working capital, you've got from operations something that is much more reasonable and close to the impact of what we've got in net results outside of impairment.
That's clear.
Sorry, your first question was about the total.
If I do the math, I mean, you published the contribution, the losses. If I exclude the impairment,
yeah.
And when I give a split between the first and the second half. Second half of last year, the net loss for your share is approximately 150, 160 million. So I don't think that this year will be significantly different. So my question is that should we double the losses? That will give me approximately 300 million, excluding any impairment for your share, which looks pretty high, unless you put in place some measures.
Okay, no, fully understood. Okay, so your math are correct, because this is fair to say that the result of this PCA was mainly, the negative result was mainly on the second half. So the question is again to, on one side, to stabilize the volume, and on the other hand, the question is to lower the break-even points significantly in the PCA. And we've taken actions, including significant headcount reductions. But at that stage, I remain quite conservative, because I do not have clear signs in January and February of improvement.
Okay. It's very clear. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Raghav Gupta from Citigroup. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Thank you. Thanks for the call and for taking my questions. I'd just like to come back to Dominic's question on depreciation at OV. When I look at, and I know that it's kind of broadly similar to where it was, I guess, for the second half of 17, but when I look at the charge that, you know, when it was in GM Europe, it was 3% of sales for depreciation. Today, you know, for you, it's not, you know, 0.5% of sales. In the takeover presentation, you showed how you expected depreciation would rise from a 2016 level. You had that chart where you have it indexed to 100 and kind of rising gradually. Can you just remind me and kind of just help me and understand what, you know, what enabled that reduction, I guess, from 3% to 0.5%? What, was there a change in policy? Did you kind of write off a load of the assets?
Okay.
That's the first question.
Okay, thanks for the question. Yeah, in fact, there is nothing new compared to what we had announced when we made the acquisition of OV. When we made the PPA exercise, we put at the fair value, fair market value, the all the assets of Opel Vauxhall, and this has led to a low value of the assets, of the fixed assets. And after that, we've got every year, as we had announced at that time, an increase in the amortization. It's exactly the same thing that what happened in PCD, and it's true that we need to fight after that in the recurring operating income an increase of the amortization each year of around 100 million euro per year. That's fair to say that.
So as more kind of CapEx, I guess, and R&D is going in, you expect clearly that level will kind of rise gradually. And so kind of what we're talking about getting to 3% of sales, or at least kind of to the same rate that it is at PCD by, you know, 2022? What's the kind of
Well, in fact, our policy for the group, as you know, is to spend between 8 and 9% of R&D and CapEx. And you can see that more or less we spend 5% in the past years. We've spent more or less 5% in R&D and the rest in CapEx. So progressively, we will reconstitute a basis of amortization that is consistent with this reason. But compared to what GME was doing, there is a huge difference because the level of investment is much lower.
Yeah, okay. Understood. And I guess related to that, the capitalization policy, you know, when I look at it compared to your peers, it seems somewhat kind of more aggressive. How do you, what's the justification for that? Whether it be kind of, you know, what you say to the auditors, you know, why is there this kind of discrepancy when I compare it to some of your peers in terms of the amount of R&D or development costs that you are capitalizing, kind of the capitalized percentage of gross R&D?
Well, as I was mentioning before, our capitalization policy has not changed in the past years, and it's been very, very, very stable. And if I compare to our French peer, if I look at 18, our numbers are very similar. But the evolution is not similar because we've remained stable in PCD, and that was, I don't think it was the case for the other competitor that
sure.
you mentioned.
Okay. Okay. And second, I guess, question or topic would be just the FinCo. How does the, you know, the fact that it sits in the JV, when I think about residual value risk, which kind of is a big topic of conversation, I think, kind of in the market, how are you advantaged by the fact, with the structure, the fact that it's in a JV? Does that, you know, clearly share of profits? But when we think about it from a cash or capitalization of the bank perspective, if residual values turn and come under pressure, can you just kind of run me through how that is a kind of a benefit for you, like from a cash perspective? Because I imagine from an earnings perspective, it's kind of no different.
Well, I don't think that we've got a significant difference by the fact that we're in a GV 50-50 on the real value thing. What is important for the balance for the exposure is the risk that we've got on the balance sheet and the correct management of it. And what we can see from because I guess your question is about the diesel in 18, which the fact that is important is we've not seen any degradation of the residual values on the diesel side, which was actually good news.
Sure. Okay. All right. Helpful. Thank you so much.
The next question comes from the line of Stephen Reitman from Societe Generale. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for doing this call. I have two questions. First of all, about the new earnings guidance. And I understand fully that it's an all-weather guidance, and I think the comment was made that even in the event of Brexit, you're still pretty confident of making at least the over the 4.5%. But is there any discussion within the group about giving a range? Because clearly, with the PCD OV already making a 7.6% margin in 2018, it's quite exasperating, frustrating when you have this just over 4.5% for the next few years. That's my first question. And then secondly, moving in about China, and as you said, the significant deterioration in the second half of the year, what active steps, apart from the cost cutting and the workforce reduction, I mean, clearly there's an issue about the model range, and how quickly do you think you can actually change that? Because when I look at the models, and particularly vehicles like the 4008, which is clearly in Europe as a 3008 is a phenomenal success from a volume and a profit perspective, but clearly in China the volumes were down, I think 39% in 2018. So you know, what can you do that's specifically going to fix the China problem? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your two questions. On the first one, well, we've got no intention to give a range, and I think what is really for me exasperating is to see that it's extremely difficult to have clear rules of the game in Europe, talking about the rules, the political rules, and that's what makes us
That's what makes it difficult to give a guidance when you are at the end of February. On the second question, that is China, I do not share your view that we've got a question about the model range. I think we've got basically, on top of what I've mentioned before, a question about the sales and marketing approach and the management and the network. That's one point. And the second one is a question about the governance of the joint venture. If we talk about the governance of in the joint venture, we cannot continue to have discussions during weeks and months between partners about what we need to do, because this is not the pace of the market. And that's, for me, the main issue, and we're working on that with our partners. You can see that we've announced some changes in the about the people in the PCA, the joint venture with DFM, and it's a good sign. And what we're working is to have full alignment on the commercial policy with our partner. And I think it's much more a question of governance and sales and marketing policy than product, because if we look at marketing research, you were mentioning the 308, which is named 408 in China. If we look at marketing research, it says that there is no issue about the car. That's the first thing. And the second, if you look at the level of differentiation of this car compared to its Volkswagen competitor, between Europe and China, the level of differentiation is the same. So we don't think it's a question of product. We think it's fundamentally a question of management of the network, development of the network, policy to push performance instead of paying for standards. Well, to work on the basics of the management of the network, as we've done in Europe in the past years.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Horst Schneider. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking also my questions. Forecast related, and since you are now clubbing Opel and Peugeot together, would be great to get some more granularity on the EBIT walk down for basically both brands. So therefore, first of all, it would be great to know if you could tell us if the price and product mix enrichment will be still positive in 2019 for Opel and for PCD. What I always struggle with is, what is the impact of these small models? I mean, you launched this year the Opel Corsa and the 208, and in theory, these are smaller models with smaller EBIT contribution. Is it right to assume from that perspective also then that mix rather going to be weaker? Because you say all the time, of course, that mix is stronger, but what is the impact of these two models on mix? These are my first two questions.
Yeah, so thanks also for the questions. It is fair to say that in the future we'll only give a bridge for the auto, because our policy is not to split between brands, and in the past years we've not opened between Peugeot and Citroën. And on top of that, the bridge given to make a detailed bridge when we are integrating the company becomes an exercise that is becoming, in fact, theoretical. About your question about the product momentum, so we will, and the product mix effect. So we'll have in 19 a product mix effect that will be positive. It will be a green bar again, but it's fair to say that it will be probably less than what we've experienced in 18. 208 on Corsa, you should remember that these cars are launched at the end of the year, especially the Corsa. It's the very end of the year, so it will not have a significant impact on 19. And the 208, it's also I don't remember if it's end of Q3 or beginning of Q4, to be frank. But it's the very end of the year too. So it will not be a significant impact for 19. We're more talking about 2020.
Is it then for 2020 a negative impact, these smaller models?
No, but the product mix is always positive because we refresh you're substituting an old car with a new car that has higher margins, and on top, and especially and when we talk about 208 on Corsa, on top of that we will go for a volume on this segment that was 208 plus C3. To a volume 208 plus C3 plus Corsa on the same platform, on the same basis. So it will be something significantly positive.
The launch costs, where you consider the launch costs for these models, or there are no significant launch costs for that?
Well, the launch, well, you can see that we've got launches very levelized now every year. Mm. So the launch costs that we've got 1 year or the other are quite similar now, because we try to have regular launches with, you remember the commitments to have one launch per brand and per region minimum each year. So you can consider that launches costs are quite levelized.
Okay, all right. And then lastly, then on production cost savings. I mean, of course, we see the numbers always. I mean, every year you have got a positive figure, but what is the change then versus 18? And especially, what is driving the production cost savings at Opel? So we have got this Sigula deal, which might be, I don't know. Maybe you come to an agreement, maybe not with the unions. We don't know yet. But what is the production cost savings at Opel and also PCD? So a split by brand would be good.
Yeah, well, Sigula deal would not be on the production on Falcon and Bauer. Right? It would be on R&D. And just to remind you that the Sigula deal is designed to avoid an issue, because we've got to decrease the cost, because you remember that the workloads coming from third parties is going to decrease after the agreement that we had with the previous owner. So the deal that we're doing is to avoid to have a P&L issue in the future. On production and procurement, well, the levers, so production and procurement, we're talking about purchasing, we're talking about manufacturing costs, and we're talking about logistics. In OV, there are significant improvements to be made in the plants through the traditional levers that we've been using since August the 1st, which means basically reducing complexity, reducing diversity, reducing the square meters in the plant, working on overheads, opportunities and the HPV, and there is still a significant difference between PCD and OV. On the purchasing, what will help us on the productivity side is a common organization between PCD and OV that is taking speed. And on this part, of course, the more we get advanced, the more we've got common parts between PC and OV that helps to manage the productivity with the suppliers. And then
but that also implies that the main improvements from that should only occur in 2020. Right, when you have got the CMP platform running at Opel and at PCD.
It is fair to say that the purchasing gains are coming with implementation of the same platform for cars from both sides.
Mm. Okay.
That's a fair comment. And after that, in logistics, well, in 19, we should have some cost reductions due to the fact that compared to 18, to the fact that we had in 18 some extra costs for the Aisin gearbox coming from Japan on one side, and for the EB engines coming from China. This was generating an extra cost that will disappear in 19.
How much was that? Can you quantify that?
Well, it's you can say it's a three digits, but a low three digits.
Okay.
After that, you've got SG&A expenses, in which basically it's a work to synergize PCD and OV activities.
Positive, yes. Okay, good. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Charles Caldicott from Redburn. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got two, please. The first is on working capital at OV. Have inventories now been completely right-sized, or should we expect more changes to the working capital in 2019? And then my second question is actually just coming back to the issue of product mix once the small cars are launched in 2020. I take your point that it's positive because you're substituting an old car for a new car, but I'm just wondering, as small cars become a greater proportion of your mix, and as the SUVs, the very successful SUVs, become the 3008 and the 5008 become a smaller percentage of your mix, is it fair to assume, therefore, that the product mix would be negative on the bridge because of that effect? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Charles, for your questions. On the inventories, there is still some upside in OV. Of course, it will not repeat working capital that magnitude. But just to give you a precise example, what will stop in 19 is cars coming from Korea, which are basically the car and the Mokka. So this will disappear in the second half of the year, which means we have a positive working capital effect on inventories by the end of 19. Our policy is clearly to have all production for OV localized in Europe, and not to have a cross-continental flows as could exist before in the past. On the product mix, of course, when you launch C and D segments, the product mix effect is a green bar that is larger than when you launch the smaller cars. That's something that is traditionally in the industry. So that's a fact. The benefit that we will find in the product mix is the fact that we work with platforms with bigger volumes, so we work on the profitability that is supposed to increase. But I profit that you make that kind of questions to give a message on one point. I've been asked in the past day, so what can go wrong in 19? And there are upsides in product mix, in production, in procurement, SG&A. The big stage for 19 is management of the CO2 transition and preparation of 2020, which means among the levers, one of the three levers is the elimination of bad actors in terms of CO2. And the key question, and frankly it remains kind of question mark, is how will impact sales, because it not depends only on you, it depends on what your competitors are doing. Everybody has to reduce the number of bad actors in terms of CO2, and the question is, are you more performing than the others in this exercise or less? And that could impact the bars, product mix, or the bar volumes.
Great, thanks.
The next question comes from the line of George Dieng from ODDO BHF. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Yes. Hello. Good morning, Philippe, and thanks for taking my question.